Okay, this is 3/24/2010. It's Mary Perry interviewing Mr. Charles Roger Stapleton here at the Kentucky Historical Museum in Frankfort, Kentucky. So, good afternoon.
Hi, Mary. Thanks.
Yeah. So, first off, let's get a little bit of background history. Where were you born and a little bit of your childhood locations where you lived?
I always considered myself a native Kentuckian, but actually I'm not. I was born in Rapid City, South Dakota, because Dad was stationed with the Strategic Air Command at that time. So I think Mom and Dad had intended for me being born in Middlesboro down in Bell County, but he ended up having to report to his duty station out there, and by luck of the draw, I was born in September. So I can always remember Mom saying out in South Dakota in the summer with no air conditioning, she would never have another child that was due in early fall. So it may be why I'm an only child. I don't know.
Only child.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, okay. But Middlesboro was always home. And when Dad was called to duty somewhere else, that's where we always came back to. So that has always been the place that I consider my hometown. And other than being here in Frankfort since 1990, Middlesboro was the place I lived the longest prior to that.
How long were you in South Dakota?
Oh, I don't know. We weren't there for more than a year or so. I know, I don't remember all the individual moves up until Dad went to Vietnam, but I know we were in South Dakota for however long he was based there. Then we moved to Kansas and then apparently to Mississippi at some point as well. The earliest one I remember is Oklahoma City, and that's where we were based right before he was called up to go to the Vietnam War. So
how old were you there?
I would have been maybe in the first grade there. First time I ever experienced a dust storm was there. First time I ever experienced fire ants. We lived on the base. I can remember going down into the tornado shelter. Tinker Air Force Base is sort of on a ridge right there. And one of the things that I remember really well was standing in our driveway and watching tornadoes tear up downtown Oklahoma City.
Oh, my heavens.
Yeah.
So you lived on the base. You went to a military base school too?
Then we, at some point in Oklahoma, and I don't recall, we lived off base a little bit. And I can remember we called it the buggy house because it had quite the infestation of bugs crawling around it. And my mom always hated that place the most. So, not a whole lot of major memories. I can remember being young and the parents would give us, there was a little boy and girl next door. The duplexes were just one on each side with driveways, so it was just two families. But we get coffee cans and go out and catch horned toads, and that was right during the beginning of the space race. And the big thing that we did a lot then was take blankets out and lay in the backyard and watch for satellites and stuff like that. So it was a really idyllic growing up. I didn't know any different. Of course, in Middlesboro, I always enjoyed the fact that it was more a rural setting. My grandparents' property abutted up to Cumberland Gap National Historical Park. So
a lot more trees there.
Yeah, a lot more trees, a lot more water. But we still had fun. I can remember collecting hailstones, and you know, a lot of the stuff I think that makes me like to watch the Weather Channel now probably imprinted on me out there.
Yeah. So how old were you when you left that location?
I guess I would have been at the end of my first year in grade school going into my second year, because I can remember Dad was shipped out to Vietnam, and of course, as the military does now, you don't get to stay in your housing. You know,
right.
You have, so we moved back to Middlesboro, and
so your mother's family is from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, both parents are from down that area. So she had a very large family to help her out. I mean, a lot of cousins and everything. And my grandparents were still alive then. So we moved back there, but we took the train.
How was that?
Oh, that was wonderful. I can remember It was, you know, this would have been the early 60s, and taking a train all the way from Oklahoma City to, it was a long trip. I guess we made it to Knoxville. I can't recall if we were picked up down there, if we rode on into Middlesboro, because they did have passenger traffic. Hmm. But I can remember on the train ride just sitting for hours staring out the window. And
So what year was that?
That would have been 65, I guess. So I would have been maybe 7.
Okay.
I know one of the stories Mom always told, and it sort of, she told it with a grin on her face, was the fact that my dad had just gotten glasses before he shipped out. And I guess I turned around and told the guys riding in the rail car behind us I had two daddies, because I had the dad I was used to, and then when he was getting ready to ship out to Vietnam, he had glasses. So it was, you know, it was two totally different images of my father that I was dealing with. But
he was in the Air Force.
Air Force.
What did he do in the Air Force?
He went into. Dad was one of those unusual characters. He during World War II dropped out of high school to sign up before the war was over, and went into the Army. So he was at the very beginning of the Army Air Corps. He worked in radar. And when the United States Air Force was kicked off, he resigned from the Army and went into the Air Force. So, but he was in the occupation forces of Japan, so he spent time there and always loved any kind of Oriental culture, Oriental food and everything. I've got my soy sauce kick from him. I love
Kentucky, Japan.
I know, yeah, he loved it. And then Dad was a career Air Force. He retired as a senior master sergeant with 23 years in, and he traveled the world. He was in the closing days of World War II in Japan. He was based in the Philippines for a year or two, worked on the Dew Line in Alaska for a year or two, was based up there, fought in the Korean War. That was probably the most active frontline work he ever did, and then wrapped it up with the Vietnam War. So he's a three-war vet. But
The Korean War, obviously, is before you were born.
Yeah, it was before I was born. My uncle, my mom's brother, was in that as well. He was a tank driver. He had gone in at Fort Knox and fought in the battle on Pork Chop Hill. They made a movie about it, you know, years ago. So had both sides of my family had military backgrounds, but Dad was the one that made a career out of it. So
how'd your parents meet?
Mom was working at the Coca-Cola plant there in Middlesboro, and they had grown up in the east end of Middlesboro. It's a very small town. They had all grown up in the same area, and there was another family that all the teenagers at that time hung out with, the Massengills, and the Stapletons and the Suits. They all ran around with the Massengills. It was one of those deals that, but now Mom was a Rosie the Riveter. She worked on B-24s in Detroit, and then came back when Oak Ridge was constructed, and she worked down there. And I've got some wonderful photos of her. She, you know, they didn't know she was a secretary and worked in the office. They had no clue what they were making. Yeah, and then remembers one day everybody was celebrating. So you know, the bombing. But one of the interesting stories she used to tell was that up on the roof of the plant down there, they had constructed a miniature city. Miniature cities with big lakes and stuff, and the girls would sneak up there and sit with their feet in the water, and the guys would come and get onto them, go, you know, the whole idea was to camouflage it if the Japanese wanted to bomb or anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was real interesting having those both perspectives, but coming out of rural Kentucky, it was a great opportunity for those individuals to get out and see the world. And
so your mom married your dad when she was how old?
They got married later in life, and they had both known each other for a long time. Of course, with Dad being gone to the Philippines and everywhere, he had done pretty much all of his traveling before he and Mom got all of his traveling outside the U.S.
Right.
Before he and Mom were married, and After they were married, the only real travel he did outside the United States for an extended period was to Vietnam. When he did retire, we were based in Langley in Virginia, and he was over part of the world that went all the way to the Azores and all the way from like the Mississippi River. He was inspecting radar installations. So he did a lot of traveling, but it wasn't, you know, extended. He was always back home on the weekends and stuff.
Your mom pretty much knew what she was getting into, though, marrying a military man.
Yeah, I think so. I think she always wanted to move back to Middlesboro. I think Dad would love to have retired and gone to Japan or stayed in or moved back to Florida. We were based in Florida for a while, but. Mm-hmm. He had all of his, several of his brothers, his oldest brother still lived in Middlesboro. So when Dad retired, he ended up getting a job at Montgomery Ward's there in Middlesboro, and his brother worked at Sturkey's. They were both, you know, competing stores basically, and they just fished.
Yeah.
You know, they would leave work early and go to Norris Lake and fish. Okay, so, yeah. And then both of them retired, and then Dad just, you know, he fished and went to the American Legion in the evenings, and that was it, so.
So what do you remember about him taking off to Vietnam?
I don't really remember a lot of his leaving, but I do remember I was in the second grade when we moved back to Middlesboro, and I can remember we'd be at my grandmother's house. She had a shotgun house right there next to Yellow Creek, and we would watch, we'd be in the dining room eating, and then the national news would come on. And I would always rush in there, and Mom would say, well, if you see Dad, yell out. And, you know, my grandfather would come in there and sit with me sometimes. And, you know, I'd always watch it. So I grew up with, you know, that whole year at that age watching the evening news when probably none of my peers were.
Right, so you had a much broader knowledge of the world.
And I got him, you know, I really got where I guess identified with Walter Cronkite and Dan Rather and all of them because they were part of my childhood, you know, along with Kangaroo, Captain Kangaroo and everybody else. But never did see Dad. I mean, there were a couple of times that were close by where he was. He was at Tonsonut in Vietnam for a while, and then they ended up moving him into Thailand. Udorn, I think, and several places there because they were really involved with the bombing of North Vietnam.
Yeah.
So I remember that. I mean, I remember watching things like that, and you know, being really surprised by, you know, what you saw on TV, even though it was in black and white. You know, it was not sanitized as today's war is. So.
Yeah. Did he communicate back and forth with each other?
Yeah, my mom recently died. She died about 3 weeks ago, and I'm cleaning out her stuff, and I found a big box of his letters to her. So I've set those aside. I'll go through those sometime.
And
but
they can be donated to the Kentucky Historical Society.
My dad's uniform is here.
Good.
The uniform he wore on the day he retired, his dress blues. When Dad died in 95, I donated it to the Military History Museum.
Good.
So it's already here.
Right.
So, it was, I can remember bits and pieces, you know, and I can remember, of course, being in the South and Southern Appalachia, there was no question about it. We were doing the right thing.
Sure.
And of course, in 65 and early 66, it was the buildup.
Right.
So, you know,
just getting started.
Mm-hmm.
So did you write him any letters or?
I really don't recall.
Any audio recordings or?
No, we didn't buy a tape recorder. I've still got the original reel-to-reel we bought, but we didn't buy that until after we got, you know, after we moved back to Middlesboro, and then I guess I bought that in about 67 or 68.
Okay.
So it wasn't, we didn't send anything like that. I know Mom sent him some of my school work and stuff like that. So, you know, second grade, third grade, right around through there. I know I was probably writing stuff to him, but I just don't recall it.
Did he come back any of that time back home?
Uh-uh. No.
Was there the whole time?
Yeah, his mother died while he was over there, and they couldn't get a hold of him with enough time to let him know before she was buried, so he chose to just stay and not come back. So, but you know, it was real interesting trying to stay connected with him that far away when it was just letters. And I know Mom didn't read me everything about the letters and stuff. So, but it was a great existence. My uncle was there, and he really, you know, he sort of stepped in and tried to fill in the role. I can remember him making me a go-kart, you know, with a lawnmower engine and stuff. And, you know, so for a kid 7 years old, 8 years old, you know, it was perfect. We lived at the end of a dead end street, so we played kickball in the street, and we explored and rode bikes and everything.
Got out in nature and that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's six. So what grade were you when your dad returned from Vietnam?
Would have been going into. See, this is where it gets a little fuzzy. Mm-hmm. I know I was in the fourth grade when Dad retired from Langley. Mm-hmm. So I guess I was in the third grade or had already started the third grade when he got back. But, you know, the time period seemed longer. I know that when we were in Oklahoma, I guess I was in kindergarten and then just starting first grade maybe. And then we came back, and in Middlesboro I was in second grade. Mm-hmm. And then third grade would have been down in Florida.
So you moved, when you got back, you moved to Florida?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Actually, while I was in the second grade, I think I went to three totally different schools in three totally different states.
Do you remember all those?
Florida, I think, was part of it. Mm-hmm. I think we moved down there just at the tail end of that. Then, of course, Middlesboro. Mm-hmm. And then I guess Oklahoma would have been the first grade then.
Okay.
But, you know, it was like boom, boom, boom.
Boom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it a little disconcerting sometimes. Everybody was trying to teach me how to write cursive in totally different ways.
Oh, and, wow. That is a little challenging there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when your dad got back, what are your memories of him getting back? And where did you all move from Middlesboro at that point then?
Yeah. He was then sent down. They wanted to use his experience from Vietnam. Mind you, this is still during the war buildup.
Right.
And so Eglin Air Force Base in Florida was where a lot of the jungle warfare training, the, you know, the combat training and things like that took place. It would be like one of the last stops for the Air Force component before they went over to Vietnam. So they transferred him down there, and I can remember him telling us that we were going to be moving down there. Mm-hmm. And I laid in bed one night, just I was scared to death that the crabs were going to eat my toes.
Oh, no.
That was the one thing, you know, not worrying about anything else. I was just, yeah. But we were on the Gulf Coast, and it was beautiful. It's Fort Walton Beach, and the sand was white as snow, and the water. Oh, no. It was really nice there. It was a totally different area of living than what we'd had out in Oklahoma. You were just street rows of duplex, where we were down in Florida. Now, mind you, Dad was an NCO. He wasn't an officer, so he's a non-commissioned.
So he already retired?
No. He was a non-commissioned officer in the Air Force.
Okay.
So
he didn't live on base there.
We lived on base, but it wasn't as nice as the officers' housing.
Okay.
So these were duplexes that were 10 together, mm-hmm. connected.
Yeah.
And luckily we had an end one, and so we had a street corner. But one of the funny things was we went back, I guess Mom and I went back probably in, Mom didn't make it back, but I drove down there in the early 90s and went back through that area, and it's still pretty much the same, but it's just row after row after row of these duplexes. Mom put a blue light bulb on the porch.
So you can tell yours.
Well, yeah, and it became a landmark for everybody.
Wow.
And I know one night the bulb had burned out.
Mm-hmm.
And she had like three or four people stop her the next morning and say, "You got to get that bulb replaced. I missed my turn last night."
I guess it would get confusing down there.
One of the cool things, way down on the other end of the duplex, I'm trying to remember her name. It was a Japanese lady had been married by was married to this Air Force soldier, Air Force and he was an NCO. Fuji was her name. But she, mom and dad would get her to babysit me occasionally.
So you had some more Japanese influence.
Oh, God, I loved it. She'd take my shoes off and rub my feet and fix. God. Oh, I know.
Lucky kid. Lucky kid.
She was as tall as I was.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. And then I think one of my first great loves occurred when we lived down there. There was another babysitter we had occasionally, and her name was Storm. I can't remember her last name, but I was telling my daughter about her. That was the name of my first dog.
When
Dad retired from the Air Force, mm-hmm. I could finally actually have a pet.
Yeah.
I'd always wanted pets.
Pet.
Yeah. But she played baseball on the high school team and had long dark hair and very athletic.
And what, fourth or fifth grade?
Would have been probably third.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but it was really neat down there. One of the cool things about Eglin was to get into the base proper, there was a section of the runway you had to drive across. So there would be a red light there if air traffic was coming in, and they would stop you. So you might be sitting like from here to the lady at the front office here, and have a B-52 land or a Blackbird. I always thought that was cool. I knew about Blackbirds before any of my friends did, because I could watch them land and take off and stuff. And Phantom, F-4 Phantoms, I always thought those were the sharpest planes.
Yeah.
That. But living down there was really neat, because I was a boy from the mountains. We were living just a few minutes from the beach, and all this was going on. And Dad took us back into the bombing range one day.
Yeah.
You know, they would shut it down like on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And let families drive back there and stuff, and you'd see blown up tanks and everything. So that was really cool. And then Dad ended up getting they asked him where he wanted to go. That would have been his last deployment, and he asked for, I can't remember, two other places, and also asked for Langley, Virginia. And I thought, well, we're going to be really close to home, because Middlesboro is right there where Tennessee, Kentucky, and Virginia meet. Yeah, well, it was in Virginia, but it was as far away from
Virginia.
It was in D.C.
We're
pretty much
suburbs,
in. Yeah, yeah.
What grade was that?
That would have been the fourth grade,
okay.
And I went to on base school there as well. And we lived in a two story duplex there. The next door was a Mexican family.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember on the front of the duplexes, you always had the name of the family living there, and it was Haime. So I'd walked over when we were moving in, and I told Mom and Dad, I said, well, the Jamie family lives next door.
Yeah.
And they introduced me to salsa and hot peppers, and I still love them to this day. They had one boy the same age as me, and they had stair step, two boys and a girl.
Yeah.
And they were my best buds, and we had a baseball diamond we had in the backyard. So, went out there and played among all the pine trees and everything. It was really neat being there, because you had NASA, you had the CIA, which really we had Dad had no dealing with. But I just thought it was so cool that NASA was there, because I was into the space race. I was into the moon landing and everything. And
go over to Washington, D.C. and do...
Yeah, well, Mom and Dad drug me around to Yorktown, anything that was around there. We went to the Civil War sites, Fort Monroe, everything there. And I was sort of bored at the time, Jamestown and stuff, Georgetown, Yorktown, all that. But it ended up being the field I work in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But one of the things I do remember, and I can't remember which crisis it was, but they locked the base down, and we were stuck on the base. Yeah, I don't remember which one it was. I remember a little bit, only because probably it was a manufactured memory from Mom and Dad talking about it, but Dad got sent down to the Bay of Pigs when we were out in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And I don't really remember that. I remember the fact that I know it happened then.
Sure.
My earliest memory that I can really date a particular day to was in Oklahoma. Mom was in the bathroom doing her hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked in and said Kennedy had been shot.
Wow, 62?
That was
63,
yeah. And I can remember that. And Mom was like, no, don't be making up stuff like that. And I can remember watching Oswald being killed on TV. I wasn't in school then, and so we were home. We may have actually been in the buggy house when that occurred. But that's my earliest benchmark memory. I know there's things before that, but I have no idea what date. Yeah.
So how long were you up in Langley then?
We were there for a year. Pretty much, they, whatever assignment you got was a minimum of a year. Mm-hmm. And Dad started spending that time sort of wrapping up his career and doing a lot of traveling. He was doing a lot. That was the other thing Mom was getting tired of.
He was gone a lot.
He would fly out on Monday morning and fly back Friday afternoon. Yeah. And so she was getting really tired of that. My grandparents were getting older. My grandfather had died in 67, so my grandmother was alone there. And I know that they probably had tons of discussions about, she wanted to go back. Dad was like, oh, I'd rather go to Florida and fish.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
So,
but in terms of where you wanted to, grow up and go to school, that was...
They really wanted me to go through school my latter years at one school.
Yeah.
Because, second grade, doing three different schools.
That's not such a big deal. High school is a different story.
That was it. So we moved back, and I started fifth grade at East End Elementary and stayed there the whole time. Yeah. Well, I was in the second grade. That's how I ended up going to three different schools. East End still had the original four-room schoolhouse. And so I actually got to experience that with two classrooms two grades in a classroom.
Yeah.
And then they opened up the new school, so I was there for part of second grade, and then we were out in Oklahoma part of second grade.
Florida.
Yeah. So I'd sort of gone the gamut of all kinds of school buildings. We went to Florida, and the one thing I do remember, all we did is play at school in Florida. We had Spanish. We had music. We had dance.
That
it was just
fun.
Well, it was fun, but it just killed me.
Yeah.
Middlesbrough had been rather rigorous, and then we went to Virginia where I can remember Mom complaining about it, like 86 to 100 was an A in Florida, and 95 to 100 was an A in Virginia. It really had an impact.
Yeah.
And it was fine. I mean, I didn't consider it anything different.
That's the way your life was.
Yeah, I could make friends pretty easy, and you just went to the door next door and beat on the door to see if they had any kids and could they come out and play.
I think that military does train you to do that.
Yeah, I remember I got on a bus somehow when we were down in over in Langley and got lost. And that was one of the really neat things about growing up then. A lot safer. Mom called the MPs and they stopped the bus and got me off. wasn't a problem. Yeah.
So what does your dad talk to you anything about his memories of his military service, particularly Vietnam?
He wrote a mini book. I think I gave that to Tom when he was up at the museum. Just his recollections and everything. The one thing that, you asked me earlier if I remember anything about Dad coming back from Vietnam. I remember he had his travel bag, military issue travel bag, and he had opened it up and he brought a couple little dolls for Mom. They're from Thailand, and then he bought me a sapphire ring, and he bought her some jewelry, too. None of that was as cool as the dead tarantula in the bag.
Oh, gosh. I see a little kid would really like that.
It was in his pocket, and it was crushed, and it was just like he dumped it out, and Mom freaked out, and I was just like, oh, that is so neat. I remember having it on a piece of paper, moving it around.
Yeah, and of course he wouldn't have relayed a whole lot about his experience, given your age.
Yeah, probably not. He actually, Dad lived the life of what a lot of these movie stars try and do. He was telling me in Japan, during the war, that they wore civilian clothes, and they packed a .45 caliber pistol with them all the time, and they carried it in a bag. And then when he was in Vietnam, he didn't live on base. He lived with a couple other guys that were in the radar company, and I can remember him telling me one day they were in a two-story house, and came down one day, and he said all the guys got up and left to go to report to the base, and their housekeeper ended up killing a crate snake on the first floor, which is sort of like a cobra. So, you know, that was one component I remembered. I remember Mom years ago, after Dad had died, she never really liked Oriental people. And I kept like, well, why is that? And apparently there were all these all these Vietnamese and Thai people that had adopted Dad and his buddies and stuff. Yeah, and I think she was a little jealous over the fact they had that year with him that she totally lost.
Yeah, I never had that year back.
Yeah. But it was, you know, at Langley, we started discussing stuff about me going to Vietnam. Of course, Langley, Dad got out in June of 68, so that was the Tet Offensive year and stuff like that. And there for a while, we had some heated discussions. And as time went on, I only missed the draft for Vietnam by 2 years.
Wow.
I think I'm the only age group that never registered with Selective Service, because they stopped it for 3 years and they made it retroactive for two.
Yeah.
So people born in 58 are not on any books about
it. Kind of an interesting blip in America's history.
Yeah. I got this then too. I got this in 74.
You
want to
describe that for the.
Yeah, it's a. POW, MIA POW bracelet from the Vietnam War. This one has Major Henry Bronner on it.
Mm-hmm.
He was shot down over Laos in 3/29/72.
Did they ever find him?
No, I contacted I contacted a group that would send information on to the family, and they said the family doesn't want to receive requests or anything. But there's a couple of websites you can go to now. I filed the report. He was on a... C-130 that exploded in the air. So, you know, they're not going to really find much of anything.
Yeah. I understand that.
But the funny thing was, toward the end of the war, Dad was saying, no, I don't want you to go.
Really?
It had changed so much from when he was there
that
he said, going over there and...
It's not going to accomplish
anything. Get you killed, likely.
Was he ever talk about any kind of... actual really death threat that he had? I mean,
The Korean War was the one that we would watch MASH together, and he would talk about that sometimes, and they had an episode on there once where there was this, they called him 5 o'clock Charlie. It was a pilot that would fly over in his beat up plane and throw a bomb out.
Yeah.
Dad said they had one of those.
Wow.
Said the guy would come over the base in the afternoon right before dark. Well, all they had were aircraft.
Yeah.
You know, the guy would be high enough up that...
Yeah.
And apparently he was so not a threat that they sort of figured it. He was their good luck charm.
Okay.
The guy would come over and bomb them and, you know, just totally miss everything. And,
oh, my gosh.
And, you know, so they just sort of left him alone. But Korean War, they were shelled some. Vietnam War, the base was shelled a lot and stuff like
Where did he stay in Vietnam? I mean, was he in the Philippines, on Clark?
No, he was at Utapau.
Okay.
So he was in Thailand when he wasn't in Vietnam at Tan Sanhut. One of the interesting stories he told, Philippines after World War II, he was based there for at least a year, maybe 2 years, and they were working on radar, you know, way out in the world there in the jungles, developing runways and working on stuff like that. And they used the natives, the indigenous people there, called the Mosquitoes, the very little indigenous Filipinos that, you know, used blow guns and everything. And he was talking about one time that he had apparently been given the night's previous password. And he said he can remember laying face down on the runway with one of these mosquitoes with the blowgun right at the back of his head.
Oh my gosh.
Until the MP came over and
relieved
him. So
pretty scary.
Yeah, I mean he did a lot of stuff. I remember talking about being up on the dew line in Alaska, up around the Arctic Circle, and they had to strip their grease gun machine guns and put a different kind of oil-based product in it because it was so cold they would fire once.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, so they put something in there that was viscous at a lower temperature. So, you know, he he had a good time. He didn't see combat as some other people did, but he was
given that this point where he served.
Yeah, but he was under fire several times, and you know they had a good time. I think on top of everything else.
Yeah. And then to move back to Middlesboro, Kentucky after all that.
I know. I don't see how he did it. But he loved the mountains, and he loved fishing.
Yeah.
And he loved my mom and knew that she wasn't going to be happy anywhere else.
Right.
So it was. He retired from the Air Force with 23 years and then retired from Montgomery Ward.
Yeah.
And one of the funny things, you know, he worked in radar. He was an electrician.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up completing his education through the military. He dropped out his junior year in high school. But I guarantee
it wasn't atypical at the time.
Yeah, yeah. And I guarantee you he had, education-wise, equivalent of a master's or a PhD,
sure.
You know, in electrical engineering when he was finished. But he was colorblind. So
well,
all this,
flown any planes,
yeah.
Sure.
Well, all this stuff with electronics and everything else. But then to top all that off, when he retired, his first job was in with Montgomery Ward's was in the men's department. He was the director of the men's department, so he's helping people pick clothes out. And then when they downsized Montgomery Ward's right before they started closing them completely around the U.S., he was the head of the paint department.
Isn't that strange? It's a weird world sometimes.
I know. I mean, he could see which light on the traffic light was lit.
Yeah.
But he couldn't
tell what color.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
So did you all have some conversations growing up as you hit teenage years?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Beyond,
yeah,
about
yeah.
War and military?
Yeah, yeah. I actually wanted to go into the military. I wanted to go to the Coast Guard Academy. Mm-hmm. But my eyes, I started wearing glasses right when we moved back to Middlesboro. I thought everything was blurry for everybody else.
Yeah.
And I think bouncing around from school to school.
It never got picked up.
So I can remember asking the teacher if I could walk up to the board to read it, and I think that was the thing that keyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We lived on a hill there in Middlesboro, and I can remember the night I got my glasses. I just stood in the window
mm-hmm.
with the lights off, and Mom said, "What are you doing?" I was like, "I didn't know that those were. I didn't know you could see stars like
that." Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So we would have discussions. You know, at first, Dad was very, very much a war hawk, and.
Yeah.
Any of the peace protesters, he had no use for him and everything. And I was waffling around growing
sure.
up in the military, but then
your
mm-hmm.
edge too.
Growing up in the military, you know, I was exposed to all that, and which
the
was
good, the bad and the ugly part.
Yeah, yeah. Which was funny because when I was in high school, I ended up befriending several of the military recruiters because they were what I, you know, my comfort level was around military
sure.
people and. You know, the way that they saw things and the way they discussed things. And but I tried to get in the Coast Guard Academy. My eyes knocked me out of that. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll just hold off. And
and
about my freshman year in college, Dad said, you know, I'm glad you didn't go into anything.
Where'd you go to college?
Went to UK for 3 years and then moved back to Middlesboro. I was studying biology, and it was just...
Not what I wanted,
and I ended up getting into school right over the state line in Tennessee and got a degree in museum studies.
Okay.
So that was
you know,
I'd dropped out and worked in radio for a couple mm-hmm. years. I was a news director at a radio station. I'd gotten my FCC license when I was like a sophomore in high school and worked in radio all through high school.
Yeah.
So,
you have a good radio voice.
Yeah, I've been told that.
Yeah.
I don't like to listen to it.
Yeah.
But so moved back there and really got me motivated to go back to college after 2 years of working.
Sure.
So,
that happens to a lot of people.
Uh-huh. So, you know, Dad was always supportive. I know I disappointed him. I took some chemistry classes and physics classes that I just didn't apply myself to
sure.
and kept getting lousy grades in them and, you know, not applying myself.
Sure.
But once I found what I was interested in,
it makes a huge difference,
yeah. So...
Mm-hmm.
But he got to see me graduate from graduate school, and so, you know, I think I made up for it.
Yeah.
I hope.
Every parent wants their child to do well, so Mm-hmm. So do you have children then?
I have a daughter. She's 10. I'm divorced from her mom, but they're in Florida this week for spring break.
Okay.
My daughter got... my dad would have absolutely been nuts over her. Mm-hmm. She got my mother's blue eyes and looks a lot like my mother and can fish like my dad.
Wow. But he never got to know her.
Mm-mm.
How about your mom? Did she ever get to meet her?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mom was living up here when she died. We moved her up here when Claire was four to help take care of her and stuff like that. So, yeah, they were close. Claire was there the night my mother was taken off life support and everything.
How old was she then?
10. I mean, it's, this
3 weeks ago.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago. So,
sorry for your loss.
Well, thank you. Mom lived a full life. She was 87 and fell.
She had an active, busy, interesting life.
Yeah, she fell and broke her hip on Christmas Day and didn't want to hang her. You know, she wouldn't want to have been bedridden. She took care of her mother for like 4 years.
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
So she pretty much called her shots there.
Yeah.
And
that's a good thing.
Yeah, but she and Claire got very close.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm
a lot of good memories of grandmother.
I'm really tickled about that. So. Yeah. So, yeah, I can see a lot of both my parents in them, in her, and, you know, she has a good memory of my mom, so that was cool. So.
Yeah. Of course, she never got to know your dad. So.
No, Dad would have loved her. She would have loved Dad, too, because he loved to fish, and she loves to fish.
Yeah.
We went to Norse Lake this past weekend, mm-hmm. and I had to... We fished all we could. The water was coming up, and it was muddy, and you know, nothing was going to be caught that weekend. But
so, in terms of looking at your experience as a son of a military officer and your opinion,
NCO,
excuse me,
non-commissioned officer,
and then just your view of war and military now. You want to give any perspectives or philosophy in terms of conflicts and that conflict? And
one of my buddies says I'm a walking dichotomy. You know, I'm not pro-war. The NRA is too right-wing for me, although I have, I think I counted it up, 25 guns. You know, I've collected guns.
Sure.
I don't hunt.
Mm-hmm.
I like to target shoot, but if I'm going to shoot something, I'm going to eat it. You know, I don't see the thrill out of killing something just to kill it.
Yeah.
But, I have mixed feelings about what we're involved in right now. Fully support the efforts in Afghanistan, although knowing the history of Afghanistan, no one's ever gone in there and survived it coming out unscathed. I actually have a close cousin. He called me the night after my mom's funeral, and he's with two SEAL teams in Afghanistan. So I was real surprised to hear from him. So I support that effort. I don't see anything that was accomplished in Iraq except creating more jihadists. I just don't support that at all. I would love to be able to talk to my dad about what he feels about it, because he's seen America in three totally different wars, and one of them a win and two of them a draw. I love the military. I think they're getting the raw end of a deal on that. I think it's disgraceful that soldiers' families can be on welfare. You know, I personally, if it was my deal, I would make the military one of the best paying jobs around, and up there with school teachers and stuff like that, because it makes an investment into
their life.
Yeah, into their life and into the country.
And the family's life, too.
Yeah, I think we're...
Come back and don't have jobs available. So.
Mm-hmm. I think the country is really wrong in the way it's treating those individuals and rewarding the Wall Streeters for cheating everybody, you know. But no one asked, so...
Well, I did.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
And I think there's some concerns about PTSD and some of the veterans coming back.
So, mm-hmm.
So I really think this oral history program...
Mm-hmm.
Is a good resource for people to deal with some of those issues.
Mm-hmm. I know growing up in Middlesboro, two of my best friends, their father, the whole family ran this little market, the Latifs, that's their last name. Their father was in World War II, Louis, a very short, dark gentleman. I mean, just wonderful person to be around. They're Syrian. Yeah. The Latifs, of course, over there it's Latifs, mm-hmm. but they moved back to, you know, they were in Middlesboro. Actually, a lot of the people with ethnic sounding names, the Italians, the Lebanese, the Syrians, people like that, they brought to Middlesboro to straighten out Yellow Creek and line it. Huh. At one point, Yellow Creek was lined with wood. Mm-hmm. So that's how a lot of the families got there. Middlesboro was founded in 1890, mm-hmm. so a lot of people moved in there then. But Louis Latif would never talk about it, mm-hmm. but he fought in Italy. Hmm. Went in at the very tip of Italy and fought all the way up to the top, and apparently had a platoon wiped out around him, got on, you know, saved the radio and saved what was left of his platoon and everything. Wow. So, I mean, there were a lot of these guys that never spoke of it.
Yeah.
Another buddy of mine in high school, his dad was a medic that landed at Normandy, mm. you know, jumped out of the planes and landed. I mean, so you had all these guys that we grew up with.
Yeah.
They didn't say squat about it.
Yeah.
And Dad would never talk about it until later in life.
Sure.
And then he really, really wouldn't talk about a whole lot about it, you know. And same thing with my uncle. I can remember one of the most vivid things my uncle said was that they were buttoned up in their tanks, mm-hmm. and they were on standby, and they were trying to catch infiltrators, and said they were sitting in the tank, and one of them said, "You smell wood smoke?" And the other one's like, "You're crazy. There's no fires around here." Well, it was the Chinese, mm-hmm. would stand around fires to keep warm, and it was the smoke in their wool uniforms they were smelling as they were crawling under the tanks and stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, I had all this history from all these guys, and they never talked about it.
Yeah.
You know, I know each one of them dealt with it differently. My uncle was an alcoholic, you know, and, you know, they all handled it totally different. You know, Dad would have some problems with some of the Vietnam vets that mm-hmm. wore their service.
Mm-hmm.
They were shrouded in it all the time. You know, the professional ex-vets, you know, he called them. And he had a lot of difficulty with that. He was on the honor guard, the burial guard, there with the American Legion. And they developed their own uniforms, white button-down shirts, black ties, yeah. black trousers, and, you know, they did all these funerals and stuff. And he didn't have a lot of respect for these guys that were professional victims, you know, sitting on the side of the road. Homeless vet, you know.
Yeah.
He had very little.
Pull up their bootstraps.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, and you never saw that from the Korean War mm-hmm. or World War II.
Yeah, yeah. It's
so.
A little different. Of course, there
was. It was a totally different war.
Yeah, the
but
reception coming
yeah.
back was wholly different, and the nation was at a different place at that time.
Yeah, at the end of the Korean War, Dad flew back, but my uncle was on a ship.
Yeah.
And it took him, you know, 6 weeks
yeah.
to get back. So those guys worked out their own issues then.
Sure.
But, you know, Dad had a lot of patience for so much, but then there were some things that just tripped his trigger, and he had very little patience
yeah.
about, so.
Yeah.
Like the Vietnam Memorial in D.C.
Have you been to that one?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep.
Was he able to go up there?
No, no, he never made it up there.
Bomb
yeah, yeah. Well, he'd never made it up there.
Okay.
But he had a problem with the original design.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the veterans called it the black gash or whatever
yeah.
because it was just so stark. Once they put the soldiers,
mm-hmm.
then they all loved it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just felt like, you know, it was not representative of what they did.
Sure.
So when Dad died, I had to be up in D.C. Mm-hmm. about 2 months after his funeral. And I took some mementos and left it at the Vietnam Wall for him, and then also at the Korean War Monument for him.
Yeah.
The World War II one wasn't even, the dirt hadn't even been turned for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you been to the one here in Frankfurt?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I took him up to see that several mm-hmm. times. He loved it.
Yeah.
You know,
he'd know some of the people on the
mm-mm. Mm-mm. No, not really. He had gone into the military in World War II, so
yeah.
so you know there was a lot of guys that fought in the Vietnam War that he had very little tie to. There was actually one guy in Middlesboro that was based at Eglin the same time we were, and they ended up working at wars together. So that was pretty much his war buddy. You know, they'd not been in combat or anything or been overseas together, but they at least had that common bond there. So
that history.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you have any other comments or memories or recollections?
I've saved some of his, like, parts of his fatigues. I've got his field jacket from the Korean War. You know, I've got his, I was going through some stuff here the other day and found his, his overseas jacket, mm-hmm. his, some of the stuff they had for the jungle wear and stuff like that. And it was interesting. You know, I wouldn't trade my life growing up for anything in the world. You know, I've experienced so much more than a lot of my contemporaries had. And
gives you a better worldview, too.
Yeah.
You're forced to look at where geography is on the other side of the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, growing up, I went to school way before any of the kids in Millsboro with African-American children, Mexican-American children, Japanese children, you know.
And pretty much white Angles, you know, in Millsboro.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I was exposed to pretty much a lot of different cultures before any of my peers were, and I don't know that it made me any different, but it was just a different perspective from, you know, from what they had. But also really appreciate the fact growing up there in Middlesboro, mm-hmm. and you know, so that's always given me a strong bond to this state and a strong tie, you know, to
even
to,
if you were born in South Dakota.
Yeah, yeah. I told my daughter the other night though that here in a couple of years when she's 12 or 13, mm-hmm. we're going to either drive or fly out to South Dakota, and I want to go there, and I've got a buddy that is with Deadwood City, he's with the city there, and go up to Custer and Mount Rushmore and everything, and she's like, well, that's cool, let's do it now.
Yeah, sounds like she's trip happy.
Yeah,
so that's a good
thing. She loves to travel. She's got her mom always loves to travel. I've not been, yeah, I don't know, you know, growing up and doing so much traveling, and then the job when I first moved up here to Frankfort, mm-hmm. was all traveling.
Yeah.
I was with a local history program with the Historic Society, so we went out and worked with small museums, mm-hmm. genealogical groups. It got to the point you'd get up in the morning and look at the phone book to try and figure out where you were, and I was like, I'm done with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've got a lot of the traveling out of my blood already, but... But, you know, the exhibit out here, there were several things. I took my daughter through it when it first opened up in November, and I can remember a lot of stuff. Dad would bring back sea rations, and, you know, I always loved tearing through those to get the chiclet chewing gum out and stuff. And, you know, we were in Florida when one of the big hurricanes hit, so he got called out. We're sitting on base. You know, that was another one of those things that was so unfair to my mom. But it was everybody there.
Yeah.
All the women were sitting at home with the children while this Category 4 hurricane was, you know, battering everything. But they had to go out and take care of equipment and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think later in life, Mom wanted Dad to be first for her and not for someone else. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, so, you know, growing up, it was interesting. You know, being an only child was interesting, mm-hmm. too. A lot of the military families had huge numbers of kids and stuff. And, you know, so I was a little bit of an anomaly on that as well. And my daughter's going to be an only child. Mm-hmm. So, you know, growing up, I'm mindful of some of the stuff that I missed out on. Mm-hmm. Her two best buds are, one's 2 years older and one's 1 year older, so mm-hmm. she's not going to feel like she was an only child.
Child.
Yeah. So some of the stuff that I experienced, I'm really trying to be mindful that I don't do the same thing. Yeah. The cool thing with this exhibit, though, the P-38 can opener, the sea rations, you know, there was a lot of stuff that I was explaining to her, mm-hmm. that had my tie. You know, how I felt about it and what it meant to me and stuff. So, so she really enjoyed it. She enjoyed going through it. And I promised her I'd bring her back down here, and then we're going to go up to the Military History Museum building, mm-hmm. and go take a look at that and stuff. So,
and when is that going to be completed?
Well, it's open on Saturdays right now, so you can go up and tour the building right now. But the exhibit, I don't know how soon they're going to, you know, have the exhibits back up there or anything, but. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's been a lot of fun, you know, and growing up you know, in the military was just something I thought everybody else dealt with.
Well, I appreciate you taking your time here today with us.
I hope I gave some background to something. I don't know. You know, it was growing up in the 60s. Dad was out of the military when he was getting ready. I can remember being at Langley mm-hmm. when Robert Kennedy was assassinated.
68, yeah.
Yeah, and then we had already moved back to Middlesboro when Martin Luther King was assassinated. Right. So, you know, the difference there, mm-hmm. you know.
The reaction and the response.
Yeah, there. Yeah. I know if we'd been on the base, it would have been completely different what was felt there in Middlesboro at the time and stuff. So,
yeah.
It just gave me two viewpoints that I really didn't, until many years later, understand how significant they were.
And now I think you do. It gives mm-hmm. you a broader worldview, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
It.